This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman. This is a 10th episode show, episode number 740. Thank you so much for joining me today, as I am here at one of the Tesla supercharging stations, and the car is charging up. I am just waiting for it to finish. It's almost done. God, I gotta tell you, you know, first of all, I wonder if you can hear the car charging, because it does make some noise when this happens, as a massive amount of electricity is going into this battery, and it's going in at the rate of 199 miles for every hour of charging currently. That number goes down as the battery gets more charged. 395 volts and 103 amps. And as I learned as a child, because I was very into Thomas Edison, he was one of my idols. I loved to tinker and invent things, and, you know, back then, well, I'm not that old, but back then, you know, the inventor of the electric light bulb and the movie projector and all those other things that Edison, well, maybe he wasn't really the inventor, but maybe Tesla was, the car's namesake, was the inventor of many of these things, but Edison was the one who was popularized for them, I'll say. I learned that amps times volts equals watts, so just look at the massive amount of power there. Right now, it changes, by the way. 396 volts times 101 amps. Let's just do the math, and then we will talk about some real estate. Yes, this is a real estate show. 396 times 102 amps. That is 40,392 watts of power going into this car as I sit here. I almost wonder if you can hear the electrical field on the recording. Maybe you can, I don't know. I do not know, but that is a lot. So think about the 1,000 watt appliances you have in your house. Gosh, you know, if a blow dryer is 1,000 watts, this car is basically using the equivalent of 40 blow dryers right now, right? And many blow dryers are 1,500 or 1,800 watts, like microwaves, but it gives you a point of reference, right? So that's interesting. And I just got to say one more thing about Tesla and Elon before we talk about some real estate stuff and then get to our 10th episode guest today, who's quite, well, yeah, this episode's going to be a little controversial. I'm just going to warn you in advance. It's not the first time. We're no stranger to controversy here on the Creating Wealth Show. But this episode will be no exception. So I remember when I was thinking of buying one of these almost self-driving cars that's going to change the game of real estate forever when they really get on the scene here. But this is the closest thing we've got now, the Tesla autopilot feature. I used to see these pictures and videos of these carports with solar panels on top and the Tesla supercharging station below the solar carport. Yet, now that I've stopped at many of these superchargers many times over the almost year that I've owned this car, I have never seen one drop of solar power anywhere. I just see giant transformers hooked into the grid, because guess what? Solar is not what it's cracked up to be. It's a supplemental energy source. It's not a replacement energy source. Anyway, enough of that. I just want to point that out. All these left-wing ideas of solar power and green energy and all this stuff, you know, they just ain't there yet. In fact, they ain't even close. You know, the safest, cleanest form of energy we have available to us is good old nuclear power. Yes, coming from the atom, that is one powerful form of energy. Okay, enough of that. What do you fear? What do you fear? Do you fear bad health? Do you fear terrorism? Do you fear nuclear war? What do you fear as an American? You know, what is your greatest fear? Well, I just thought, interestingly, since this is an election season and we're talking a lot about politics on the show lately, which, by the way, will end in just a few weeks, and we'll get back to, you know, the non-political stuff. But this is an interesting article, and it's by Michael Hawthorne from Newser, and this article just goes through the big fears people have, and I'll go from the bottom up. Guess what the, of these, what is that, how many are there here? Well, doesn't say, but I don't know, what are there, 10 fears here maybe listed? So, from the bottom up, number 10, Obamacare. Yeah, 35.5% of the people surveyed are very afraid of Obamacare. And this is a USA Today survey, I guess. And yes, there are 10, by the way. Obamacare was number 10, pretty serious. People I love becoming seriously ill, 35.9%. Identity theft, hey, that's a legitimate concern. Folks, we've done a few shows on identity theft where I've talked about it. I have been a victim of it, as I can tell, about 3 times in my life. There are various levels. There are various types of identity theft. But you got to be conscious of this stuff. It's important. And it is a major hassle to try and fix identity theft problems. It is a real hassle. And it can haunt you for quite a few years. And it has been a bear for me. I've really had to deal with that and spend some real time and resources on it. It's a hassle. So do things, take good steps to protect your identity. Okay, moving up the list. Economic or financial collapse, 37.5%. We talk a lot about that on the show and on the Holistic Survival show, too. Check that out, holisticsurvival.com or on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. People I love dying, 38.1%. Government restrictions on firearms and ammunition. Remember, we're going up the list, okay? This is the 5th biggest fear, according to a USA Today, which is left-wing leaning, survey. Government restrictions on firearms and ammunition. 38.5% of the people fear that. Being a victim of terror, tied at 38.5%. Not having enough money for the future, 39.9%. We're here to fix that on this show. Terrorist attacks, 41%. And number one fear. Now, we're in an election season, and this is the number one fear. Corruption of government officials. Number one by a huge margin, 60.6%. 60.6% of Americans have their number one fear is the corruption of government officials. Wow. And here we have this election with an arguably greedy businessman who doesn't want to win the election. He could not possibly want to actually win. I don't know. Am I just being a tinfoil hat conspiracy theory here? But Trump says such crazy things that it just doesn't seem like anybody in their right mind would say that kind of stuff if they actually wanted to win the election. I don't know. At times I think he wants to win. At other times I really think he doesn't. And who is in the rigged election his competitor? Well, it is arguably one of the most corrupt government officials we have seen in modern history. Yes, Hashtag Hillary is a criminal. Hillary Clinton, the criminal. The criminal Clinton cartel. Yes. And that is the biggest fear among Americans, according to the USA Today report. In USA Today, left-leaning, okay, certainly I would argue that, 60.6%, that is their biggest fear, is corrupt government officials. That is truly amazing. I think the fear is not unfounded. I think it's pretty accurate because a corrupt government official influences so many areas of our lives, and it influences our real estate investments. It influences everything. So there you have it. That's the survey. And one of the things I want to say about this election and, you know, the discourse out there that is so, it's really just depressing. It's awful on both sides of the aisle. My mother used to say to me when I was a young kid, she used to say something that probably your parents told you too. And I think it is very profound given our guest today and the entire discourse in our political world today. And that is, here's what Mom used to say, Jason, two wrongs don't make a right. Two wrongs don't make a right. And so one side will say, well, look at all this person did or that person did, and then that'll justify the other side's words or activities, right? And then, you know, it's on both sides of the aisle. It's ridiculous. You want to get out of that a little bit, you know, vote for Gary Johnson. I mean, it's truly amazing that Gary Johnson has arguably more popularity than any Libertarian Party candidate so far. And he's not allowed to participate in the debates. That just shows you that the whole system is rigged. In fact, one of my friends, Jeff Hayes Films, he published a documentary, just came out last week. It's entitled Rigged 2016, the rigged election. And it would be very hard to argue that the system is not completely rigged, that we basically get two bad choices every time, and we are left with choosing between the lesser of the two evils. That's about as far as we get. It's all we get. We never get an actual good choice. We get the lesser of the two evils. And you know where my thoughts are on that, so I won't pontificate. Let's get to our guest. You're going to hear some pretty salacious stuff here from the longtime friend who was a childhood friend of Bill Clinton. Billy, she calls him. Longtime childhood friend of Bill Clinton, and later became his lover and then mistress when he was married to Hillary Clinton. This is going to be pretty fascinating stuff. Yes, we will get back to real estate on Wednesday in 2 days with episode number 741. But this is a 10th episode. We go off topic and usually we talk about life success or something. But, you know, hey, we got an election just a couple of weeks away or a few weeks away. So we'll make this our 10th show this time. So here we go. Let's listen to that. Make sure you check out jasonhartman.com for some great properties. HartmanEducation.com for great educational products. Let's get to our guest on our 10th episode show. We have a really interesting guest for you today. It's my pleasure to welcome Dolly Kyle to the show. She is a childhood friend of Bill Clinton, formerly his adult lover. They had a relationship before and during his marriage to Hillary, and she's author of the new book, Hillary, the Other Woman. Dolly, welcome. How are you?
I am just doing great, Jason. It's nice to talk to you, and I think we have quite a few things that will be interesting to your listeners.
We sure do. It's great to have you on the show. So tell us about your relationship with Bill Clinton. Did you meet in grade school, or can you give us that background?
All right, I'll give you the background, which is a bit lengthy, but I'm a novelist, so everything's a long story. But I met Billy when I was 11, and he was 12 going on 13. We were both playing golf at the Belvedere Country Club in Hot Springs. I was friends, he was friends, and our friends knew each other, and they introduced us. It was an instant, and I might say mutual, attraction, something that the Italians call the thunderbolt. And we became very close friends in high school. We dated and we were friends, but I did not have sexual relations with that band major, Billy Clinton, when we were in high school.
Got it. So, and make sure you're wagging your finger when you say that.
I can't do it without wagging my finger. Oh, me. Anyway, so Billy and I had a really intense and deep friendship that lasted for many, many years, decades, actually. But at the end of high school, Billy was going off to a college at Georgetown in Washington, D.C. I was going to SMU in Dallas. And Billy told me then, I mean, we had some pretty serious discussions, but he told me that over the long term, he thought I needed to marry someone for security and that he had plans for his life and that I was a big distraction to him. So I didn't quite understand that, but he said he wanted to be president of the United States.
Even back then, huh? Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. And in fact, everyone knew it in high school because the summer between his junior and senior year, Billy was elected to the American Legion Boys Nation, and there was a very famous picture of him shaking hands with President John F. Kennedy in the Rose Garden at the White House. I've actually had people say that that was a photoshopped picture. I mean, it is amazing the silly things people come up with these days. But anyone who has questions should call me or contact me on my website, dollykyle.com, and just ask, because there's no point in having these silly rumors going all around the world. It's too easy to fix things these days. But anyway, so Billy went off to college, I went off to college, and right before I left Hot Springs to go to SMU, on August 1st, 1964, I was drugged and raped by one of Billy Clinton's friends. And I mention this because it's a very important part of the entire story, and I dedicate my book to survivors of rape and sexual abuse. And of course, at that time, I never dreamed that Billy Clinton would be a rapist and serial sex abuser. Never, ever dreamed it. He seemed like such a nice guy. Anyway, years later, I mean, we stayed connected in terms of writing, calling, seeing each other on vacations and things like that. But I married, had three children, finished college, ended up getting divorced. And so that takes us to 1974. So this is 15 years after Billy and I met. And this is when we began our, as I call it, adult relationship. Okay. So this was January of 1974. Are you still?
And how old were each of you?
Well, I was 20, almost 26. I was 25,
and so Billy would have been 20s, and he's a year older.
Yeah, he's 2 years older than I am. Now that's the other thing. We graduated in the same class from Hot Springs High School, 1964. I skipped two grades in school. So,
I'm glad to hear he didn't flunk two grades. Yeah, that's good.
No, but you know, I try to work that in usually because so many people want to say, "Ah, she's a bimbo." I don't think so. People, just hang on and listen. No bimbos here. Anyway, Billy and I reconnected in January of 1974 as adults, you would say. At that point, Billy had been living with Hillary at Yale. And then they graduated, and she went to Washington to work on the Watergate Commission thing. And Billy was in Arkansas at Fayetteville at the University of Arkansas teaching in the law school. Well, he had told me in, I guess, 72 in the fall that he was moving in with this law student named Hillary. And so I heard a girl's name. I said, oh, yeah, so what's the story with that? He goes, oh, no big deal. She's got a place to live. I'm moving in with her. Okay, fine. So he acted like she was no big deal. And guess what? He never changed his attitude about that, did he?
Not much. No, I guess not.
Not much. She was no big deal. No. Okay, so 1974, I was living in Little Rock, divorced with three little children. Billy was in Fayetteville. Hillary was in Washington. Billy was seeing all of us at certain times. And I say all. He was also dating Marla Kreider, who was a junior at the University of Arkansas, and Billy was running for Congress. Marla volunteered to work in his campaign, and then they began having a relationship. So before anybody gets too curious about how I know about that, in this small world of Arkansas, years later, Marla ended up dating my ex-husband. And she became friends, very good friends, with one of my daughters and knew about my relationship with Billy. So she told my daughter about that. So that's how I know what I know about Marla. And she was a truly lovely woman. Well, Hillary sent her father and her brother to Arkansas to spy on Billy, ostensibly to be helping him with his campaign. But if anyone thinks that two guys from Chicago can come help in Arkansas, they don't know much about the culture here. Anyway, they came down to spy on him and I guess found out about Marla. Hillary swooped in from Washington, went through Billy's papers and everything, and found these cute little notes and cards, letters from Marla, and shredded them and started calling Marla in the middle of the night, threatening phone calls. And so this was the first of what I know of Hillary scissor hands destroying documents that would in some way change the story that she was trying to present of herself.
Well, that was probably before they had widely available consumer paper shredders.
There you go. So,
you know, folks, listeners, I just got to tell you, Bill and Hillary are such easy targets to pick on that I just have to be snarky. So pardon
me. Yeah, go ahead. I mean, jump in and do it. It's almost impossible to resist.
By the way, just to give the listeners a sense of context, Dolly, when is the last time you had any communication with Bill Clinton? Or I love it, as you say, Billy. You know, when's the last time?
Well, I hate to say this, but as I am 68 years old and he is 70, we mostly run into each other at funerals these days.
Wow. So you have seen him. I mean, what, like, when's the last time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is Arkansas, okay? And he likes it here, and he comes back, and he has his little Hugh Hefner penthouse up there at the, what do you call that? We call it here the Clinton Library, LIE-BERY.
The library, yeah.
the library, which is sort of a play on our Arkansas hickness.
Right.
And
lying, yeah. And lying.
It's full of lies. Well, actually, there are probably more omissions, I guess, than just lies. You know, the big part with the Clintons is leaving out the part of the story that you really need to know what's going on. Anyway, so we're rocking along in the spring of 1974. Billy's running for Congress, and I talk about this in the book. And I also, I don't usually mention it, but for some reason I feel like saying, I am a novelist, and I've been writing novels for 30 years, and in some of my loosely autobiographical novels, I expound upon some of these more interpersonal relationships and the things that happened in terms of the politics and the romance and all of that. But those are not to be confused with this Hillary the Other Woman, which is a true story. And it's not on my website or anything. It's available, you know, through WND Books and Amazon and all that regular stuff. But I'm just saying for anyone who may be interested in the more, personal aspects of this, they might find it interesting to look on the website. And you can go there and not have to opt in and read 100 pages free and all like that. So if you find this story a little bit intriguing, go there and just eavesdrop and take a look. Anyway, but this story is Hillary the Other Woman, and it is a true story. So let's see. Well, it is. So that's when I met Hillary. It was in the spring of 1974. At this point, of course, she was in Washington, but she came to Arkansas for the Democrat primary. So this is important in Arkansas. And it was May 28th, 1974. So Billy and I were still dating. He called me, as he had done on many occasions, and said, I'm going to be flying into Little Rock. Will you pick me up at the airport? Well, sure, right? This is not an unusual thing. So he said he wanted me to pick him up and then take him to the TV station. He was going to do a statewide interview, which you couldn't do anywhere else. Only Little Rock had the facilities at the time. And I hate to say it, but maybe only Little Rock has the facilities now. But anyway, so he was going to go to the TV station, and then I was going to take him to the headquarters of Senator Bill Fulbright. Now, Bill Fulbright, your older listeners will know, was just the most amazing, wonderful man, represented Arkansas in the Senate for 30 years. He was not only a mentor to Billy Clinton, but he was, just about as close to a father figure, a decent man father figure, as Billy ever had. I mean, he got Billy a job when he went to Georgetown. He introduced him to everybody in Washington. He helped him get the Rhodes Scholarship to go to Oxford. He helped him get into Yale Law School, helped him get the job teaching at the University of Arkansas. And then most importantly for this particular little story is that Bill Fulbright introduced Billy to the money people in Northwest Arkansas who would support him in his race for Congress. Okay, so that was really an important piece. So here it is. It's the night of the Democrat primary. I'm going to the airport to pick up Billy. He gets off the private plane, and there's this dowdy-looking middle-aged woman with him and three guys in gray suits or whatever. And as they got closer, I realized that this was not a dowdy middle-aged woman. It was a dowdy younger woman. And I looked at her because she was really rather strange-looking to me. And I'll admit, you know, I was Margaret Mead in Samoa at the moment. I had never seen anyone who looked like this. Let's just say in the South, women shave their legs and their toes, you know. But anyway, Billy looked at me kind of funny. He says, "Dolly, this is Hillary. Hillary Dolly." And I consciously had to not laugh because I thought, okay, this is some kind of a little joke Billy's playing. He has this hideous-looking woman here.
I mean, is your point in saying that this is what so many people think, that the Bill and Hillary marriage is really a business deal more than anything else?
Oh, well, yeah. But, I mean, and seriously, Billy always had good taste in women. I mean, he liked pretty girls,
Hillary wasn't one of them, right?
Oh, yeah. My gosh, no. And I'm not being tacky, and here's the thing. I know I'm an attractive person, and I always have been, and thank God for it. I didn't do anything to get that way. But, you know, and Hillary was rather more than unfortunate looking. But, you know, anyone can try to do something.
And your point is that she didn't try to look, you know, to improve her
appearance. Well, and not only that, I realized at that point that I got a little closer. Well, I put my hand out and smiled to shake hands with her, but she wouldn't shake hands with me. She just glared at me. And then I realized that she smelled really, really bad. I mean, bad smell. Nasty, greasy, stinky, dirty hair. Their clothes were stained and dirty. She just looked awful.
I mean, weren't Billary, Bill, Billary.
Billary.
Yeah, we've heard that before. Yeah. Weren't Bill and Hillary, I mean, they were kind of hippie-ish back then, weren't they? Or at least Hillary was.
Well, Billy was wearing a suit and tie. I mean, he went through his hippie stage at Oxford and at Yale. Yeah. But, I had never had a hippie stage person in my car, okay? And I was thinking, oh my gosh, I've got cloth seats. You remember the Seinfeld episode with the valet Parker? And they smelled up his car. Well, I was thinking, oh my gosh, what am I going to do to get my car seats clean? But I was nice. We got in the car and we went to the TV station and Billy did his little interview. And while we were there, this woman was just glaring at everyone and acting nasty, and I thought, man, he should tell her to knock it off around these other people.
So she was really protective, you know, of him, right? Because she knew.
Well,
that
he
that
was on the TV. I don't know what she was doing. She just couldn't smile and be nice to people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all
she,
right.
She was just glaring at everyone, like
sure.
Like they were all her enemies, just automatically, for no reason that I could ascertain.
Well, but, she's built for politics. But hey, I want to zoom out a little bit. And,
No.
You must hear
the most important thing, which I'm finally going to get to, and that is that when we were leaving the TV station, I started to go to Clinton headquarters, and Billy said, "No, we need to go back to the airport." Well, this woman had been whispering all this stuff to him, and I said, "Why? Fulbright's expecting you." He said, "Didn't you see the election returns?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, Fulbright's losing." I said, "Yes, and we need to go over and have pictures taken and console him and all that." And he says, "No, we're not going over there. I don't want to be seen with a loser."
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that was the first time that I ever saw anything in Billy Clinton that I thought was a horrible, horrible character trait. And naturally, I sort of subconsciously blamed it on that woman who was, whoever she was, because I didn't believe she was Hillary, who had talked him into turning his back on Fulbright. And it just made me sick. It really made me sick. And it's very important because that is a trait that I should have. I didn't speak to him, by the way. I dropped him off at the airport. I didn't speak to him for 2 years after that. I was disgusted. I should have. That should have been the end of the story. Okay.
Okay. So what year is it now? Did you say, is it like 1976 or so? Or what
that
year?
Was 74. That 74. Was 74.
Okay. And when were Bill and Hillary married? Just to give us some context.
They got married about. Let's see. They got married. I think it was October of 75.
Okay. So that was just a year later. Okay. Got
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was getting remarried at that point. And he called someone the day before I was to be married and said, is Dolly really getting married? And they said, well, think so. And then the day after I got married, he called back and said, did Dolly really get married? They said, yes. And then there was the romantic little story with Billy and Hillary getting married a couple months later.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Dolly, tell us about, Bill Clinton and Hillary's response. I mean, with Hillary as a presidential candidate, there have been a lot of stories lately coming out about, Bill Clinton and, all of his sexual predator activities and his philandering and all of this. But to add insult to injury, if you will, the way Hillary has vilified and attacked these women who are, not just victims once, but then victims twice. Are these stories true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They are true. And as I mentioned with Marla Kreider in 74, Hillary Scissorhands threatening Marla, calling and, being, Marla was a sweet person. She wasn't accustomed to something like that. And the one piece that follows through all the way is Hillary's shredding of documents. When they left the governor's mansion to move to Washington in 93, when Billy was inaugurated president, Hillary had the visitor's logs shredded at the governor's mansion. Those visitor's logs would have showed my visits and Jennifer Flowers' visits and a whole lot of other women's visits when Hillary wasn't there. And so all of those were destroyed. And I think people could begin to see a pattern here and just trace it on forward right up till today where she's still shredding emails or anything else that needs to be shredded. So that was that part. The other is that I told Billy in 1977, that was the day Elvis died, August 16th, 1977, and it was earlier in the morning. We had been together, and it was before we knew about Elvis. And I told him about my being drugged and raped by one of his friends 13 years earlier, because people did not report rapes back then, and a lot of people still don't. But I was sickened years later when I realized that it was less than a year after that he raped Juanita Broderick. And I absolutely, positively believe Juanita. I have come to know her on Twitter first and then by phone, and we will meet in person soon. There is no doubt in my mind that he raped her. And it was vicious, and he bloodied her lip, and which is a trait of a serial rapist.
Just like she said. Wow, yeah, that's amazing. I mean, if you run into Bill Clinton today, would you the two of you be cordial to each other with all the stuff you're saying? I would think you're on his enemies list, and you got to worry about becoming Vince Foster or Ron Brown or
Well, I don't. First off, I am a very strong Christian. I am forgiven. I wanted to say this. Obviously, I was not a goody two-shoes, but I have repented. I've changed my life. I've gotten in therapy. I've found out about sex addiction and realized that was my problem, and I've dealt with it, and I talked to Billy about that. But all along, Hillary has been cleaning up behind him, because when she met him in 71 at Yale, she, I think, right then decided she was going to ride this guy's coattails to the White House. And if kids at Hot Springs High in 1963 and 64 would write in Billy's annual, nice to know you, Mr. President, or see you in the White House, if we knew it back in high school, she could have figured it out when she was at Yale. So this was the coattail she chose to ride, and then she had to try to keep it clean. You know, that was what she ended up having to do. Instead of having the gumption, the integrity, the intestinal fortitude, the ambition, the power, the ability to leave him and go make a life of her own when she realized that he was a serial rapist and sex abuser, that is the thing that women need to understand. Men need to understand it, too, about this person, this hypocrite, this liar, this criminal, this accessory after the fact, who is running for president. If Juanita Broderick had filed criminal charges against Billy for rape, she could have filed criminal charges for Hillary as accessory after the fact for threatening her to keep her mouth shut.
Interesting, yeah, or obstruction of justice or something like that.
No, it's called accessory after the fact. That's exactly what it was. It's like if your friend robs a bank and they come to your house and you hide the money, you're an accessory after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. That's very interesting. Well, talk to us about some of the financial stuff. I mean, there have been so many scandals surrounding the Clintons. I mean, when they were in the White House, it was like one scandal after another after another. And interestingly, the media was largely friendly to them, but they just couldn't not report all of this stuff. So it makes you think there's just got to be much more than we ever heard about, or everything we did hear about was minimized. So talk to us about some of the scandals. And by the way, I want to say, Dolly, you are an attorney. You're a real estate lawyer. So you have some knowledge as to how this stuff works and Whitewater and so forth. So share some
okay,
of this.
I'll yeah, try to yeah, go okay, through go this rather quickly. One of the things that I will say is that my book, because I have known Billy for such a long time, and our families were friends for decades. I mean, this goes back a long, long time. And because I was a psychology major before I went to law school, I explained some of these things from a very foundational perspective. And if you know these things from the foundational perspective, as I put in this book, Hillary the Other Woman, then you can actually predict what's going to happen, which is what I am able to do because of what I know. For example, this whole thing about finances with Billy, there's a couple of things. It goes back to his mother was the breadwinner in the family as he was growing up when alcoholic and other abusive stepfathers and other men came and went in his life. Virginia was the one who always made the money. You go back before that, all the way to his early childhood, and his mother left him with her mother while she went to finish her nursing degree so that she could earn this money. And Billy's grandmother was called the meanest woman in Southwest Arkansas. So if you go back and you know that, then you recognize, oh my gosh, this is what this young law student saw in Hillary Rodham. The mean, controlling grandmother who told him when to eat and sleep and poop, you know? This is exactly who Hillary is from an emotional standpoint. And then his mother, the breadwinner, is Hillary, the breadwinner. So Hillary always made more money than Billy. It was always her job to support them financially. And they were always looking for ways to make money on the side. So Hillary got a job as the first female associate at the Rose Law Firm. Why do you suppose she got that job? Because of her charm and her abilities? I'm sorry. She got that job because her husband was the Attorney General of Arkansas. And then years later, she was named the first female partner in the Rose Law Firm. Aha! Was this because she had gone to a Southern charm school and became a lovely person, and they all wanted her to be the first female partner? No, it was because her husband was the governor of Arkansas. I mean, really? People, you know, follow the money.
Well, okay, so Dolly, I mean, I agree with what you're saying, but that's not really a smoking
gun,
is it?
No,
there's
that's
more. Not a big deal. That kind
no
of stuff
problem.
Happens.
No
yeah,
problem.
Yeah, okay,
one of the things that Hillary and Billy both always did, they let everyone know that they were always on the lookout for good investments, okay? So one of Hillary's first good investments was when she hooked up with the broker, whose nickname Red Bone, and he told her he was going to let her in on these cattle futures trades. Well, the key to this is that her friend Diane Blair's husband, Jim, Jim Blair, was counsel for Tyson Foods. Okay, that's Tyson Chicken, you know, the big chicken thing, which is huge in Arkansas. Okay, so it took $12,000 to buy one of these cattle futures trades. All right. Well, Hillary didn't have $12,000. She only had $1,000. So she gets to invest in a cattle futures trade for $1,000 that, oh my goodness, miraculously made $5,000 overnight.
How convenient.
And in the next 10 months, she turned that $1,000 into $100,000, which she said she did by reading the Wall Street Journal. Well, trust me, if the Wall Street Journal could do that, we'd have a lot more billionaires in this country than we
have
right now.
Hillary, the financial genius, yes.
Yeah, and so obviously what was happening was that she was getting a win and Tyson Foods was getting a loss, and you know, try to follow the money on that. It's very hard to do. But Red, the broker, ended up losing his license. The company had a $250,000 fine. He might have gone to prison. I can't remember right now. But then when it was investigated, it was like, oh, well, Hillary didn't do anything wrong. I mean, she didn't go to jail. So that was one of them. And then the other very famous one, of course, was Whitewater. And what's funny about that is I think maybe they put in $500 or something in this ridiculous real estate adventure in Northwest Arkansas. And I will say this, chapter 30 in the book, Hillary, the Other Woman, talks about Whitewater, and I present it in such a concise way and entertaining, actually, I think, kind of like a play. And here's what happened. And people read that and they go, oh my gosh, that wasn't that complicated after all. No, it wasn't. But one of the Clinton truth suppression techniques is they try to make everything seem so complicated that you couldn't possibly understand it. And so everybody's eyes just gloss over and they just don't even think about it and they move on to the next thing.
And that is so true. You know, that is used in so many things. Things really aren't that complicated in life. You know, the basic fundamentals are a relatively simple story, but they try to hide the lie in complexity. And that's done so often. I mean, Wall Street is guilty of that all the time. It's the way they operate. So yeah, that's
absolutely
very interesting. Yeah,
absolutely. And there's another thing that happened. This one was not specifically financial, but it has been glossed over and misunderstood or not even bothered with by most people. And that's what they call Filegate. I have a chapter called Sick and Tired of All the Gates, because I think part of what the media has done is attach these words to just poo-poo it. Oh, it's just another gate. Poo-poo, it's just another gate. Let it go. But what people are not understanding is when Hillary got in the White House, she had Craig Livingstone, her security guy, whose previous experience had been as a bar bouncer, had Craig get 900 FBI files. Okay, now here's the deal. That did not just scare 900 people in Washington who had secrets. Because you know what? She didn't publish a list of whose files she had. So every person with a secret in Washington who felt a little bit guilty, which most of us do if we have a conscience, there might have been 90,000 people terrorized by the fact that Hillary Clinton had an enemies list file on them, a la Richard Nixon, but so much worse. So then, fast forward to the impeachment, why do you think we had a Congress full of cowards?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Filegate.
Right. Oh, because the Clintons had their files on them. And that's
they
why.
They had files on them.
Wow.
And no one knew what she had, and no one was going to step out and make the first peep. And that's why those sniveling sycophants in Congress just sat there with their tails between their collective legs and did nothing and let Billy skate on the impeachment.
And they knew, all those congresspeople knew that the Clintons had these files. How would the Clintons communicate that? How would they be able to communicate it without it seeming like extortion or some sort of illegal
blackmail threat?
Blackmail.
What it was? Yeah. Well, because what happened was the files disappeared and there was a Freedom of Information Act filed, and I don't remember if this one was Judicial Watch or another, And then and the FBI said, well, the files are missing. They're missing. And so there's a subpoena out for these files, and they're gone for 2 years. And then at some point after Vince Foster's death, these 900 files show up. Hillary says, well, I don't know. They just showed up on this table in the upstairs of the White House. Now, I want you to visualize 10 files on your desk, on a table, or on a table in your living quarters. Now try to picture 100 files, and I don't think they were little skinny files. Now picture 900 files that just suddenly appeared, and the only fingerprints on them are Hillary's and Vince Foster's.
Incredible. It's amazing that these two have survived, or, well, I shouldn't say survived, but just they have thrived politically, and with all of the scandals and the foundation, and it is mind-boggling how they're able to operate, and they just haven't been nailed yet.
And I explain it in the book. It is absolutely in the book, Hillary the Other Woman. Chapter 46 is called The Big Problem. And the big problem is that the problem is so big. Most people cannot wrap their minds around the breadth and depth and number of scandals that have been involved around the Clintons. And so they just poo-poo the whole thing. Well, it can't be. So let me tell you this. Most of the chapters in my book, 4, 5, 6, maybe 7 pages, chapter 46, The Big Problem, lists the Clinton scandals and people you should look up and check the connections with the Clintons in alphabetical order, 11 pages.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow.
Just the names of the scandals, not any description of them. God. Just an alphabetical list of them. Okay? And then chapter 47 is called Media Magic, or How to Make a Story Disappear. And this is the key to what's happened. And I talk about some of my own personal stories with the media. I'll bet you don't know that I filed a federal RICO suit against Billy Clinton when he was a sitting president, and he filed a motion in federal district court saying he shouldn't have to answer that because he was a sitting president, and he lost. And he took it to the appeals court, and he lost. And he took it to the United States Supreme Court, and the Supremes ruled unanimously in my favor. Did you ever hear about that?
No, not at all.
No. No, you didn't. But you know what? Lisa Meyer, the very respected professional journalist with integrity, who worked for NBC anyway, called me and wanted to do a story. Now, Lisa Myers is the same journalist who interviewed Juanita Broderick about the rape, okay? And it was a very, very powerful piece, and people can find it on YouTube. If they don't know about Juanita, they need to look that up. There's no way anyone with a brain can look at that and not know that Juanita's telling the truth. Anyway, so Lisa Meyer called me, and she wanted to do an interview with me about this Supreme Court ruling on the steps of the federal courthouse in Washington. Sounds like a good story, doesn't it?
Are you about to tell us something happened to Lisa Meyer?
No, Lisa Meyer is still alive and well, but she called me the night before and she said, Dolly, I'm sorry, we're going to have to cancel the interview in the morning. And I said, why? Is it going to be raining? And she said, no, the NBC higher-ups nixed it.
They just somehow... So what do you think happens behind the scenes? Do they get a call from Bill Clinton or one of his henchmen and say, you know, they say, if you do this, we're going to do what? How do they intimidate them? I mean, you know, it's a juicy story. The media would want to publish a juicy story.
First off, the media tends to lean a little bit to the left. I mean, I explain this in the book.
They tend to lean
toward the left anyway. And then the younger media, I've had a lot of journalists who, when they first talked to me, because, you know, I'm not going to say in the public eye, because I've done everything I can do to remain private all these years, but younger journalists would come and talk to me, and they would say, oh my gosh, this is a scoop, this is a great story, and they'd be all excited, and then they'd either never call me again, or they'd call back very sheepishly and say, well, nobody will print that. I said, yeah, I know. Don't feel bad about it. Don't feel bad about it. But you look at the connections, like you ask what Hillary did to me, okay? The reason I filed this RICO lawsuit was because Billy and his sniveling sycophants, and I call them the KKK, the Clinton Crime Cartel, they
conniv- CCC KKK, yeah, all right. Okay.
They connived to keep my book from my first novel from being published. I'm talking about a novel here, people, not the true story, a novel. And they planted false stories about me, like in the New Yorker magazine, which every publisher in New York reads, right? So you read about some blonde Texas attorney who's trying to sell this wacko story about her lying relationship with Billy Clinton and, you know, don't believe her, and that Regnery Publishing wouldn't even touch it with a 10-foot pole. And I never sent it to Regnery. They made up the story from whole cloth. And I ended up, I sued the New Yorker. I sued Jane Mayer, who wrote the story. But guess what? Jane Mayer didn't write that story. You know who's Jane Mayer's good buddy? The sniveling sycophant Sidney Blumenthal, the same guy who came up with the video excuse for the Benghazi attack. Same guy.
Oh, my God.
Same
this is unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
The connections, the ability to operate this influence machine
is mind-boggling. Then a reporter from the Washington Post who worked with Bob Woodward, you know, of the Woodward and Bernstein who turned over the Nixon thing, she flew to Dallas and visited with me, and we had a great interview, and she said, man, this is front page news, right? She goes back to the Washington Post. Does it go on the front page? No, a month later, they do a little fluff piece in the Sunday supplement. Well, you know what happened? I found out later, Jane Mayer of the New Yorker magazine is married to the editor of the Washington Post.
Folks, this is the danger. We, America, even if you love Hillary and you're listening to this, America was not meant to be a country of political dynasties. And, you know, whether it be Kennedys, Bushes, Clintons, I don't care who it is, we've got to have term limits, and we've got to not have these families with so much influence. It is, you know, they have these networks of people that are all in relationships together, and they can pull favors and keep stories out of the news and all of the stuff that you're describing. It doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. You should be appalled by this type of thing. And if for no other reason, that's why we should not have Hillary as president, even if you love her.
Jason, I got to tell you this. I get emails from people saying they've read my book. They've read all the political books. It's the best one ever because it's sort of like a novel in that I'm a storyteller, and they love that. And I say, great, post a 5-star review on Amazon for me. And you know what they say? They're afraid to post a review on Amazon because they're afraid Hillary's people will come after them. This is the United States of America?
Wow, it's like you've got these thugs that are intimidating people. Well, I will say your book on Amazon is doing incredibly well. I mean, you've got, listen to this, listeners, 768 reviews and 4.5 stars.
Right, now, it's 80% positive. Yeah, let me
absolutely.
Tell you something else.
If you had 13 reviews, I would be concerned. But 768, even with the intimidation of Hillary and such. Yeah.
Well, listen to this though. I went to number one. This book went to number one on Amazon Kindle. I can show you the screenshot. It went to number one. I waited. I did not get a number one sticker from Amazon. Because, you know, once you're number one, then you can always say, number one bestseller book, da-da-da, right?
Right, yeah.
I had my publisher call them and say, what's the deal? We haven't gotten the number one sticker. They said, well, there's more to getting a number one sticker than being number one.
There's Jeff Bezos, who likes Hillary and runs
exactly.
Amazon.
Exactly. Yeah, and we said, so what else do you have to do? And they said, well, that's proprietary information.
Of course it is. Yeah, just like...
Is that not disgusting?
Totally
I get
disgusting.
My number one. I want my little gold star. Yes, I do.
Interesting stuff. Dolly, what else do you want the listeners to know about this whole secret life of Bill and Hillary before we wrap it up here? Just, you know, anything maybe I haven't asked you or we haven't talked about?
Well, you know, the news today on Drudge and Alex Jones is about Danny Williams, Billy's son by a Little Rock prostitute, and that's a story that's going should get more traction. I totally believe that it's true, and I would encourage people get the book. And here's the other thing: if you cannot afford to buy this book, and you can get it for $8.69 on Amazon in Kindle, and you can read it on your iPhone or anything. If you can't afford that, go to my website, dollykyle.com, and tell me you cannot afford it, and I will send you a check so you can buy it. I want everyone to read this and understand what this woman is and how dangerous she is. All the she's already done so much. I mean, she sold us out our uranium to Russia. She destabilized North Africa and the Middle East. Come on, people. There is just hardly any limit to what she would do. She wants open borders. She wants one world order. She doesn't want to just be president of the United States. She wants to be empress of the world. And this is a country that should have sovereignty. We have to have informed citizens. And if you didn't know any of what I've said today, you are unfortunately in the majority, and that's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, it sure is. Very interesting. Dolly, just give out your website once more. Of course, the book is on Amazon and all the usual places, although Amazon, may not ship it to you because Jeff hates Trump and loves Hillary.
No, they'll ship it. But let me say this. And let me know if you find this to be true. People have called Barnes & Noble, wherever they are. Oh, yeah, we've got the book. Then they go in the store. They can't find it. The manager has either hid it under the customer service desk or it's in the back room. And I have had reports of this from Charlottesville, Virginia to San Francisco, California. And I saw it myself right here in Little Rock. It's unbelievable. It's like, you know what? It makes me sound like the nutcase because I'm reporting all the things that these people have done.
Yeah, right.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's dollykyle.com, but that's about the novels, and that's about contacting me and getting the money if you need it to buy the book. And go to Amazon, and even if they tell you that it ships in 6 months, they'll ship it the next day. We've been buying books every week to check on them. They don't know we're doing that because they're not quite that smart. But, the books are coming out. The books are in stock, whether they say they are or not. It was number one, whether they say it or not. And I really think you'll enjoy reading it.
Good stuff. Dolly Kyle, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.